This is the intensive school of the master in Nassau, the Bahamas. This is Saturday, August 21st. The purpose of this intensive school of the master is to put together a way a family may experience harmony, peace, balance, oneness, and love in the home. We have divided this up into 10 segments. And that would mean 10 hours. I think what we'll do is to have it be a flow. And so we'll take off from here. The topics we're going to consider are marriage is, a husband is, a wife is, a child is, a home is, harmony is, balance is, peace is, oneness is, and love is. As you have noticed there on your screen. What is marriage? A marriage is something very special. A marriage is what idiots do. People who have no sense at all get married because they think that when they get married, they are now going to possess somebody. They're going to possess their wife or their husband, and they're going to tell them how to live their life and what they must do. In fact, the marriage is the first activity of mistrust, because the husband or wife say, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust you that when you go out with the boys, that you're going to really go out with the boys. Or when you go out with the girls, you're really going to go out with the girls. And that is totally wrong. Before you get married, you never trusted your boyfriend or girlfriend that they were going to do the right thing. You knew they were going to do the right thing because that was what their nature was. You didn't marry someone because they did the wrong thing. You married them because you felt they did the right things, that they were people of quality, people of character, people who stood behind principle. Now, the opposite is just true. Many men and women marry so that they can change the other person. They want to train them in better ways and teach them what their qualities are and what their aspects are, what they think are important in their life. And in the process, something goes haywire. It goes haywire from the point of view that there's a possession there. Khalil Gibran has a book, The Prophet. And in The Prophet, he has some ideas about a child. And he said a child is something that the parents raise and train and treat to be quality type children. But then the time comes that the child, like an arrow, is placed in the archer's bow, the archers being the parents. And they pull the bow and they shoot the child off into eternity, that the child may express itself freely and wonderfully and beautifully. Now, that will come in a little while here, but that is not always the way it happens, because parents like to keep a string attached to the child. Also in Khalil Gibran and The Prophet, he spoke on marriage. And he said, marriage should be like two trees in the forest. They grow not too near together. Like the pillars of the temple, they hold up the temple roof. And each allows the other to be however wonderful they can be, however beautiful they can be, however fantastic they can be. And each encourages the other to be unique and be special. Khalil Gibran spoke from a great inner depth, inner awareness. Now, if you were a parent and you were speaking to your children and you were telling them, now, you're going to get married, what are you going to say to them? Now, you be a good husband and do everything your wife says. They would say the husband was henpecked if he did that. Now, you be a good wife and you go where your husband wants you to go. You do what your husband wants you to do. You have no life of your own. Your husband's life is the primary life. Your husband is the only person that's important in your marriage, and you are there to support him and to back him up and to be his other half, you know. Well, that kind of a marriage is among the 50 marriages out of every 100 that are breaking up. And the other 50 marriages out of the 100 are on thin ice. Now you say, Herb, how can you be a minister and how can you do marriages when this is your attitude about marriage? Well, it's not my attitude about marriage. This is my attitude about what people think marriage is. Marriage is an opportunity for two people who have similar ideas and similar desires in life to work together and carry them out in their life, in their family, in their affairs. That's the ideal marriage. And if that is the ideal marriage, you don't really have to get married to do that. You can live together perfectly well and accomplish those things. When you have children, you like to give the children your name. You like to have the children have the heritage of the family, and you like to have the husband feel somewhat responsible to take care of the kids or the wife, whoever's making the money in the family. And sometimes it's not the husband, but the wife. Many times that's the case, where she is the big wage earner nowadays, because nowadays women have much better jobs. The CEOs of the major companies in the United States are basically women. It's kind of interesting because they are fantastic people. They are organizers. They are planners. They are promoters. They know how to do these things because that's part of their makeup. And men are working from a little different angle. Now, how can marriage be a success? Marriage is a success when both the husband and wife allow the other to be themselves. And when both the husband and wife like to be in each other's presence. They like to be in each other's world. They like to enjoy the same things that each other does. They like to sit at home in the evening and watch television, for instance, or they like to work on their projects together. I know of one man who just loves his wife so dearly that he just likes to sit at her feet in the evening while she's sitting there knitting or doing whatever little tasks that she chooses to do. He just wants to be in her presence. Now, what does that remind you of? Well, it reminds me of my dog, my golden retriever, Rex. He just likes to sit at my feet. But he doesn't sit at my feet. What does he do? What does he do? He sits on them. He sits on. He possesses me. He wants you to let me know that he's there and that I'm his master and he's my dog. Well, now, that's a lovely thing. And I think every man should learn to do that, you know, and have his wife realize that she's the master and he's his dog. Well, would that make a happy marriage? That would not make a happy marriage because people like to feel that they are equals. They like to feel that they're peers. They like to feel that the women and the men are of equal responsibility and stature. They had an article in the Business Week magazine about George Bush, and they didn't want to have Kerry's wife on television saying something because she was so outspoken, and George Bush's wife was more of a diplomat. And so they had his wife get on and do it. Well, now, why was George Bush's wife more of a diplomat? Because she was interested in keeping her husband on as president. And Kerry's wife, she happened to be a very wealthy lady. A very wealthy lady. She's worth over $1 billion. Now, that's kind of nice, you know. You don't find wives like that every day. But, and she didn't care. She was outspoken. She spoke about the things that were important to her. And she spoke well. She's not bad. It's just that she was just a little tough. And she was hard to take. But can Carrie live with that person? Well, he is just being himself and having fun. Whether she has money or whether she doesn't, makes no difference. It makes it a little easier for them. But you see, the thing is, she doesn't tell him what to do, and he doesn't tell her what to do. And you look at the governor of California. What's his name? Schwarzenegger. Yeah, Arnie Schwarzenegger. He came over to the United States from Austria and built up a reputation for himself. He was the president's health council advisor, and he married into the Kennedy family, and he just did everything right. But everything he did was a success. He took himself into weightlifting was a success. He took himself into the Peace Corps was a success. He took himself into the president's health program was a success. He became a movie star, The Terminator, and all these other interesting movies, and became a wonderful success. Well, now, Marie Schreiber, his wife, what does she think of that stuff? She thinks, hey, that's okay. That's him. Now, she's buku loaded with money, too. And of course, Schwarzenegger is well paid for his movie work and his other things. He's not a poor person. But he respects her and loves her. And they try to work harmoniously together. But he himself would make a very difficult husband, I think. Because he thinks that he can go around being touching women when he shouldn't. You know what I mean? That's not his place as a man, and that is not his place as a movie actor, it's not his place as a politician, and certainly not as the governor of the state of California. But you know what he does? He wants to be himself, and he smokes cigars. And you can't smoke in the state buildings in California because they've outlawed that. So he built a tent outside of his office on the lawn, and in that tent he smokes his cigars. And his cronies come around being part with him and talking politics and so forth out on the lawn. Now, you see, here's where we run into a big problem. We run into a big problem because what are we doing? We are forgetting who we are. Now, if you and your husband love each other and he wants to smoke his cigars in the house and you don't like cigars, you would either learn to like cigars, or you would say, sweetheart, I'd appreciate if you wouldn't smoke cigars in the house, then I have to smell it all the time when you're not here or when you're here. We can go sit on the front porch and you can smoke your cigars. And he said, well, this is my house, and I have a right to smoke cigars in my house. I have a right to do this. Well, okay. Okay. That's a habit that can be not very pleasant, and it can be a habit that, but you know, there are a lot of women. They allow their husbands to smoke their cigars and smoke their pipe. In fact, it was a traditional thing historically where they did these things, you know, and it was an acceptable thing. But now we come into a different environment, a different culture, a different time in life where cigars are recognized for what they do to the body and do to the lungs. And so the husband would theoretically cooperate with that and not smoke in the house or even not smoke. Can you imagine if you are not a smoker and you are kissing your husband who's a smoker? Yeah, you know, it would not be a very pleasant thing to do. But many wives put up with it because they love their husband. And now that tells you something really tremendous. They put up with it because they love their husband. Now, did they try to change their husbands? No. They just accepted him the way he was. They were willing to do that. Now, today, I'm sure there are some women who are willing to do it too. Marie Schreiber probably is one, you know. She puts up with her husband, Arnold Schwarzenegger, because she loves him. She absolutely loves him. They have a number of wonderful children. Now, what is marriage? Marriage is when two people like each other and enjoy many things in common, and each allows the other to be themselves and have fun. Interesting, huh? But be themselves and have fun. Are you in the position to allow yourself to be yourself and have fun? Could you make yourself a good husband? Could you make yourself a good wife? Could you really realize that, hey, my wife is not interested in politics, and I am a politician, but I want my wife to know my politics, but she's not interested. Do you love her because she's interested in your politics or because she's interested in you? Can you let your personal persuasions just sort of relax and be in her company? That's a big step for a lot of people. A lot of people can't do that. A lot of people feel very much pressured because, I have had a number of women who offered to marry me, you know, and they said, Herb, I think you're wonderful. I'd like to marry you. And I've got millions of dollars, you know, and I'll put my millions of dollars in the business. And so I said, oh, no, no, no. I am not going to sell my being myself, not freedom, but my being myself, and have you put in the money, and therefore you feel you have a right to say how I run my philosophy and how I live my life. Now, if you want to marry me, and we want to be together, and I'm in love with you, great. But if I'm not in love with you, I will not marry you just for your money. And, you know, that happens to a lot of people, where we want to have peer pressure, and we have relationships because we feel that it is beneficial to us financially or something like that. And we have to be very careful. Now, what is a husband? What is a husband? Well, a husband basically is a man who has a great interest in having a woman in his life and having children in his life and having a family, not just wife, children, himself, but as a family working together as a harmonious team. That's what a husband is. Now, how many husbands have you met in your life? How many men have you met who are really wonderful husbands? Ellen's daughter's husband is an exquisite husband. He has five kids, and every evening when he comes home from his work as a computer executive, he owns his own business and does quite well with it. Every evening when he comes home, he takes each of the five children and spends 20 minutes to half an hour or more with each one, going over whatever it is that they had during the day that touched them. Going over their schoolwork or going over the problems of interacting with the other kids in school and things like that. And he worked right with them just carefully and beautifully and wonderfully. And of course, the kids love him. Kids just dote on him. And then he loves sports. So he takes all the kids out and teaches them sports. He has them go to hockey meetings. He has them go to soccer meetings. Everything under the sun. And he goes with them. Fortunately, he likes sports too. Now, I think to myself, when does he have any time for his wife? You know, five kids and each one demanding time, and then all these activities that he gets into. But his wife is so devoted to him, and she to him, and he to her. When they were 13 years old, 14 years old, they fell in love. And when they were both 25, they got married. And they are as much in love today as they were the day they got married. Because each allows the other to do whatever it is that pleases them to do. And she just loves household things. She just loves that. And yet she goes out and plays tennis. She goes out and is active in the things the kids are doing. She's driving the kids back and forth. But you see, the husband takes his role and plays it beautifully when he involves himself in family activities, involves himself in being a husband. Now, that just doesn't mean only being the husband to the wife, but it's being the father to the children and taking care of the children's interests and doing things with them, too. Otherwise, there's no reason for getting married, you know, if you're not going to have children. Now, you've got a beautiful family here. You have two children, the ideal two children, the boy and the girl that every family wants. and you have a husband and you have a wife and you have the ideal, and the wife has activities that keep her happy and the husband has activities that keep him happy, and the kids are happy in doing the things that the family is doing. This is what might be called the ideal family. However, it ceases to be the ideal family when it's only one person's point of view of what it is that should be done. And when it's one person's point of view of what should be done, then it's in trouble. When the kids say, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this all the time, then the ideal family does not come about. But when everybody sort of gets together. Now, I have counseled many families who were having difficulties with finances. And I would work with the family, with the father, the mother, and the children. And I would say, okay, now, let's just sit around the table here. What is it that is bothering us is a lack of money, okay? How much money do we have? So, without the father losing face or the mother losing face, you go right over all the bills with the whole family, the children included. And you say, here we have X dollars coming in, and here we have Y dollars going out, and that leaves no dollars basically at the end of the month. Now, how can we afford to buy clothing? How can we afford to buy the little things that make life fun? How can we afford to do that? Well, that makes a problem. That makes a big problem. What can you do? But once you involve the children in with the financial planning for the family, then everything is clear. You don't say, now you can't spend this because we haven't got that. You say, all right, now, where do you think we should cut back, or where do you think we should spend more? Where do you think we should do this? And when you come to that conclusion, then everybody comes to that conclusion. Everybody understands why and what you're doing. And there's a harmony in the family because of that. Now, a lot of times it's difficult for the parents to tell the children these things because it makes them look like the parents aren't doing a good job. You know, parents aren't being as good as they should be in running the family. And this really can become a great problem, something that's very difficult. But when there's love, when there is caring, when, hey, it's not a matter of losing face. We have so much coming in, and so. Now, if you were to say, all right, now we have this family. And this family is a nice family. And they are living on an income of, let's say, $300 a month. That's small. Now, how can any family live on $300 a month? There are many families that do it. Now, what do they have a car? No. Do they have a house? A home to live in? Yes, but not a house. Do they have this, that, and the other? You see, they live within their means. Now, do those children say, Daddy, you're only making $300 a month. What's the matter with you? How come you're so stupid, you know? How come you can't get a better job? How come you can't bring home more money for the family? The kids don't say that. The kids accept the fact if their father is the wonderful guy he is, their mother is the wonderful person that she is, and they're doing their best for the family, what more could they possibly expect? It's okay. It's okay. And so then you go over the bills with them and say, now, we have so much to spend, and that's it. And they work harmoniously with it. I know with my family, during the Depression time, that was back in the 20s, money was not too much available. Stock market crashed and all these other things took place. And so there was not much money. We lived in a very rich neighborhood, and all around us were big, rich people, like this in Milwaukee, Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, where the Brewery families lived, and the Pabst and Blitz, and the Blitz, but Pabst and all the rest of them had their home. My dad was building their factories. But these people were land poor. They were stocks and bonds poor. They didn't have the money to go buy the food. And so the kids in these rich families didn't have food to eat. And my dad was a building person, and he got paid, you know, for each job, so he had the money to come home with. And it's not that he had so much, but he had money. And so the neighbor kids would come over and look at us, you know, oh, num, 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 and they want to eat with us, so we let them eat with us. And I'm sure their parents would have liked to come over too and eat, but they didn't. Sometimes they did, though. But we were not considered to be super wealthy. We had a good income, but the super wealthy families all around us, they didn't have the money to buy food for the table. So now, did they love their fathers and mothers less because they had no food on the table? No. They respected their mother and father because their mother and father told them, this is what we're doing. We can go and sell stock, but who's buying stock when there's no market for it, you know? We can sell the property, but who's buying houses with any value at all? We would have a $100,000 house, we'd sell it for $10,000, you know? Why give it away? Let's just pull through this tough situation and let's come out ahead. And they did. They did. All these big companies just finally came out. And the family worked together. The family understood because they shared equally what was going on so that everybody knew what the finances were and what the problems were. And this oftentimes true is when a husband and wife are having difficulty between themselves. They want to hide it from the children. Well, they hide it like having a big broadcasting station on, we're having trouble, we're having trouble. And the kids all know it far better than the parents will admit to having them know it. And if the parents would just call a family meeting and say to the kids, now look, we're not getting along very well. And we don't know whether we should break up or whether we should stay together or whether we should do this for you guys or for that or what. Do you have any feeling you want to input into this, you know? And so then the kids come along and they say, well, you know, Mom, if you'd stop picking on Pop so much, then I think he could handle it. And Pop, if you'd be a little more loving and gentle to Mom instead of taking your frustrations out on her, I think we could work this thing out, you know. And the parents look at the kids and they say, oh my gosh, are you alert, you know, are you on top of it? And then they cooperate to the best of their ability. They don't let the children tell them what to do, but they cooperate. And this is how many marriages are saved. I have worked with a lot of marriages that were in the process of splitting up, and I would say, okay, split up. Go ahead. You've invested 1, 2, 5, 10 years on each other, and you already know what each other's happinesses and faults and things like that are. Now, do you want to make a go of this marriage, or do you want to start another one? You want to go find somebody else, and it'll be exactly the same as you've done here, because you have not come to terms with yourself about your problems. You haven't come to terms with yourself about what you believe a husband should be, a wife should be. And when you come to terms with what you think a husband and wife should be, then your marriage, then your life is more harmonious and more happy for you. So, what do you want? What do you want? And when I work with these people, they begin to look at each other differently. They begin to look at each other and they say, he ain't so bad. She's not so bad. You know, but she's pretty nice. I say this to people always. Remember, you are not stupid. Are you stupid? No. You're not stupid. You did not choose a stupid woman or a stupid man for your mate. You chose the very best. You had the world to choose from. Of the people who are around the world, you had them to choose from to be your mate. And you chose the person you chose. Now, after all that selection, why give it up just because of a little misunderstanding that needs to be taken care of? How can you straighten out the misunderstanding? How can you bring those things into play? Well, the simple way to bring these things into play is to have some understanding. Now, how do you have understanding of when two people are picking on each other and bickering together. Well, you say a marriage counselor might help, but that's not what you want. What you want is that you begin to help. You say, what can I do? They'll re-cement our marriage, put it back together again in a better way. What can I do? You each say that. And you'd be surprised with how much you really are aware of how you've been ticking off your marriage and making it an unhappy situation. You'd be really surprised at how well you know where you've been pushing buttons, trying to make it break. Now, is that what you want to do? Is that what you want to do? Do you want to really make it break? Or do you want to make it stay together? If you want to make it stay together, then you do everything that's necessary to make it stay together, to put it together in a beautiful, positive, strong, and a wonderful way. Now, can you do that? Can you make it stay together? Can you make it be beautiful, positive, and strong together? Well, it depends on you. It depends on you. What is it that you think you want to get out of a marriage? Once you decide what you think, what you want to get out of marriage, how much are you willing to give of yourself to make that happen? Jamie wants to learn how to play the piano. And all of her friends play the piano so nicely, and so she wants to play the piano. And so her mother says, okay, we'll take you in for piano lessons. So she starts on the piano. And then she's upset because she's not learning as fast as she'd like to. Here she is, you know, just tinkering away when she's been practicing now for 3 or 4 months. Why can't she play more music? Why can't she do better? And she complains and she complains, but Mama hangs in there because Mama knows the rules. Mama knows it takes practice, it takes practice, it takes practice to build up a talent. And so finally, after a year or so, Jamie is sitting down with friends, and they say, let's sing some songs together. Anybody play the piano? Jamie, aren't you taking lessons? Oh, yeah, I'm all right. And she plays the piano, and all of a sudden, she's good. And Jamie stops trying to remember what the book says, and she starts listening to what her heart says and begins to, how does she play? She plays by ear. And she plays by ear, and she can do wonders. She can do magical things. Now, do you think that practice on being a husband and wife, on being a family, can be done the same way? That with some practice on being loving and gentle? I have a golden retriever, you know, nice, beautiful dog, big, pure lover. He wants to do anything to make me happy. He's going on 9 months now. And he's a great boy. And I said, Rex, sit. And he sits. Rex, sit. And he sits. Rex, sit. And he says, Rex, sit. He stands there looking at me, wagging his tail. You gonna force me? Rex, sit. 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 Now, Rex, will you sit down and get down? You know, what would happen? He would just sit if he chose to, or not sit if he chose to. Does my getting upset with him, does my losing my temper, does that make him behave better? No. Not at all. But when I just am always very gentle, very even tone, Rex, sit down. Sometimes I'll just whisper in his ear, Rex, sit down. And he'll sit, you know. And now, I want to get him to learn to come when I call him. Rex, come, you know. That's taking a little more. I must tie a string to him and bring him over to me. Because he looks at me, he says, oh boy, we're going to play now. He's going to chase me. And he likes to play the game. Now, this is what families do in raising husbands and raising wives and raising children. We sometimes play a game. We come in the house And if we say beautiful things to each other when we first come in the house, beautiful things happen. What's one of the most important things in the life of any living being? It wants to feel that it is cared for. Not only loved, but cared for. I have, as he told you about Gregor, I have a number of people in my world who are crazy, absolutely crazy. Gregor is 6'6" or something, 6'5". He gets down on the floor whenever he comes in our house. He opens the front door and gets down on all fours. And then he rolls on his back and plays with the dogs and cats. They love him to pieces. They eat him up. They think he's the most wonderful guy. Well, how come they don't do that with me? I said, are you laying down and playing with him? You know? Are you one with him? Have you really taken off your human cloak and put on your puppy cloak? You know? Because he sincerely loves the animals. He sincerely loves the dogs and the cats, and I do too. And every time I walk in the house, they come running up to me because they think I have a treat for them. You know? But that's okay too, but that's not the way to win their affection. Gregor also drove the six in hand, where you drive a wagon with six horses, and you have just leads on the horses to make them go where you want them to go. He won a number of contests in doing that, but he loves animals, sincerely. He loves animals. Now, you want to know another person who loves animals? Daniel. You know Daniel? You don't know Daniel? Do you know Daniel?
The lion,
man. You don't know Daniel? Do you know Daniel?
The lion, Daniel.
Do you know Daniel? Daniel in the lion's den. Remember Daniel in the Bible, he slew Goliath. He had a slingshot and he whirled it up there and bang, hit Goliath right between the eyes and knocked him out. Now, at one point, they didn't like Daniel because he was getting too close to the king. So they told the king, Daniel is praying to other gods. And so the king had to put Daniel in the lion's den because the lions were there and they were being fed. And so the king put Daniel in the lion's den. And Daniel went into the lion's den and he says, well, guys, how are you tonight? And he says, how are you doing tonight? Hey, I don't like being here any more than you like being here. So why don't you come over and let me pet you? And so Daniel sat down. He really believed in himself. He wasn't afraid of those lions. He wasn't afraid of himself. He was content. He was at peace within himself. And he sat down. The lions all came, put their heads in his lap, and so he petted them. And in the morning, the king came rushing down and said, I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done this. He's my best counselor. Daniel, are you all right? And Daniel says, yes, sir. They opened the door, and there was Daniel with all the lions lying around him like little pets, just like little kitty cats, you know. Now, no circumstance in life is more difficult than having a bunch of lions wanting to eat you up, you know. No circumstances in life are more difficult than having something that you feel that you're not in control of, like the lions, you know. But Daniel wasn't in control of the lions. Who was Daniel in control of?
Himself.
That's right. He was in control of himself. So therefore, whatever circumstance he went into, he was in control of himself. And when he was called upon to kill Goliath, his king wanted that man stopped. And he went up to the king and he said, may I try? And the king says, what have I got to lose? All of my soldiers are running away from this very tall man. And so he just whirled up his slingshot and clunk. And then when he got put into the lion's den, that's enough to shake anybody, you know. He got in there, and he was totally at peace with himself. Now, they say, you know, you should die with courage. Well, he lived with courage. He lived with courage, and he was untouched. We, too, can live our life as a family with courage and be untouched. No. Do you feel that any task in the house is too much or too little or too important? Ellen had been saying this phrase for a long time. I'd say, Ellen, John and Patricia decided to get married. Oh, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. How wonderful. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I said, Ellen, don't do that. You are saying you can't believe it. You are being incredulous about it. You are saying that it could never be so. You're empowering the act that it couldn't be so. Now, is this what you really want to empower? Well, no. You want them to break up before they even get started? You know, I can't believe it, my goodness sake. It's like saying Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel in the lion's den. My gosh, I can't believe it. You know, he should have been eaten up. You know, well, Ellen, if you were in the lion's den, you'd be eaten up because you had that doubt in you. Daniel didn't have that doubt. When we go through life confident in ourselves and in the things that we're working on, everything works out so beautifully and so perfectly. But it's up to us. It's up to us where our values are. Now, where are your values? Are your values that you believe in yourself? Are your values that you believe in the things that are important in your life? Or are your values that somebody else is at fault? No matter what we do, if we want, we can blame the rest of the world for all of the problems that are taking place in our life. We can blame the world for the war that took place and for the separation between the two Germanies. We can blame ourselves for the activities of the Russians, the activities of the Bosniaks, of all these various nations and all these countries. We can blame ourselves for all that stuff, and we should. We should blame ourselves. Now, what if you didn't know anything about it? What if you didn't know anything about these terrible things that were going on? What would happen? Would you be disturbed by them? You're not disturbed by something you don't know about. Well, if we can keep our mind in our own business and not get involved in what other people are doing, not get involved with what we think that should be done and what shouldn't be done, then the things are solved. If we could say, and this is a phrase I like to use, now there is peace on earth, and it began with me. Now there is peace on earth, and it began with me. Now, can you say that? Can you mean that? Can you experience that? You say, well, that's too big a project. You know, my little words won't make it. It will for you. See? It will make it happen for you. Because you are the only person there is. You are number one. And when you say, it is now done, and now is peace on earth, and it began with me, then it's done. Then it's over. There's nothing else that needs to be done. There's nothing else that needs to be put into place. And think about these various people. They're living their lives in a very difficult circumstance. And somebody comes along and says, hey, come on. You remember Plato and the cave? Plato is a great philosopher, and he spoke about a cave. And these people were captive, and they were put into this cave. And every day they would look out of the cave, and they would see these shadows walking along, and they were reflected people. And they thought, oh, but those big monsters up there, you know, how terrible. And so they never tried to escape. The door was open on their cave, but they never tried to escape. And so finally, one of their people got out, and he went up there, and he saw that it was just a reflection. They were just normal, ordinary people who had no interest in what they were doing down there. But then the shadows looked like they were giants and ogres. And so he went back and he told the group, he says, hey, that's nothing but just some shadows up there. And the group said to him, no, that's wrong. Yes, it's right. I was up there. Come on, take a look. Oh, no, no. We can't do that. We're not allowed to do that. That's not acceptable. And so what did they do? They took him and tied him up and wouldn't release him, because they didn't want him to lead them into trouble, because they felt he was telling them something that wasn't true, because they could see those shadows up there and they were frightened of them. We are oftentimes frightened of shadows that we create ourselves, shadows that say to us that certain things cannot be done. And it can be done. It can be done when we put the cause in motion in a perfect and a positive and a beautiful way. Think about that. Well, that is what it's really all about, and that's what's important. Thank you.